I am amazed at how I can do certain things and just question them. Like, what were you thinking in that moment? Right now, I'm not claiming that I'm brilliant or genius, although I would like to claim that, but my wife would quickly shoot that idea down. I'm not a genius by any means. I'm not brilliant. I'm not the wisest of people you'll ever meet. There are people way smarter than me in what I do and just in life in general. But I also wouldn't consider myself on the other side of the spectrum completely ignorant or foolish or just not really having any direction in life. I'm somewhere in between. And yet, there are moments where I think I fall more on that foolish side of the spectrum. There are moments where I look at what I do and the decisions that I make and just like the daily rhythm of life, the things that I'll do, and I'll say, are you thinking ever? Like, do you actually process what you're doing? Are you moving so fast that you're not choosing to make wise decisions in that moment? So recently, I had the opportunity to perform my first wedding. For Aaron and Rachel, you guys know them, and a great couple here. You probably don't see them a lot. We see Rachel's always walking around the camera telling you act natural, right? You know who Rachel is, and Aaron's in running slides right now. So I got to perform their wedding last month, and this is my first wedding ever. And so I was super honored. I've known Aaron for over 20 years. We grew up together, and so it was such an honor to just be a part of that moment. And so I was excited. Everyone was excited. And so we're going through the pre-wedding stuff, months leading up to it. We're meeting together. And then it's the day before the wedding. It's the rehearsal. And I was advised by people who have done this before, hey, the wedding day gets really crazy. So sign off on the marriage license the day before. Like, just get it all squared away. It's okay. And that way you know that you're not going to forget about it because you don't want to mess that up. By New York State, you have 5 days within the wedding date to get that license in the mail and to their office. Otherwise, it doesn't count. And so I knew, okay, we got to do this. There's one thing on my mind. And so we get to the rehearsal, and I said, did you bring it? I said, yep, we got it. You just got to fill it out. Now, I've never seen one of these things before in person. I just assumed it would be easy. And it was pretty much basic information. I got a little tripped up on some address questions. Didn't know if they wanted my address or the address of where we're getting married or their address. And so I'm asking different people, like, can you look at this? I know no one else here is supposed, I was supposed to be the qualified wise person in the room, but let's figure this out together. And so we get it all figured out. Sign off on the wedding date. They were getting married June 22nd, 2017. Put a date down on that license. Have witnesses sign it, the best man, the maid of honor. We're all there. We're all watching this thing, okay? Ultimately, though, it's my job to make sure the information is correct. So give it back to Rachel. She gets it in the mail. And she goes on her honeymoon. And when she gets back from her honeymoon, she's texting me. And Rachel usually texts me when we're doing church stuff. And if she calls me, I know something's not right. Like, well, getting a phone call. So I get a phone call, and she says, hey, the marriage license, I got a call from the county clerk. You put the wrong date on it. What do you mean I put the wrong? I'm not that dumb. I put the wrong date on it. My first wedding ever. What date did I put? Well, you put July 22nd. It wasn't even July 22nd yet, all right? So that was yesterday. That was my daughter's birthday. So I'm like, well, what do we do now? What happens? Are we doing this again? And the county was really excited too, because they were like, how did our system actually accept this? Like, they entered July 22nd in their system. It was all good. Like, they went away on their honeymoon. And they got the call a couple weeks later of, hold on, the date. This didn't even happen yet. I mean, I'm not McFly. Like, I've never gone to the future. Yet somehow I was able to get that in with the county. We squared it all the way. But I look at that and I just think, man, how many times in my life have I done unwise things? Just silly things. Just things where it's like, how do you overlook that? How do you get that wrong? I mean, this is a really important piece of paper for this couple. How do you not get the date right? And there are moments, all of us have them, where a lot of times I chalk it up to we just moving too fast. I know that about me. There's a lot of different compartments I'm trying to keep clear in my head. My wife suffers from what she calls it, not me, okay? She calls it mom brain, okay? Some of you moms know. And so she is self-diagnosed as mom brain. There are things where she just forgets things. She's moving too fast, trying to keep everything in order. And so we have those moments in our lives where we're not intentionally doing unwise things. It might be an oversight. It might be you didn't do enough research and you made the purchase and you didn't understand all the terms of the contract. I get that. I don't want to speak so much to that this morning, because I think we look back at that and a lot of times the results can be devastating. But I mean, an oversight's an oversight, right? We'll fix it. But what about those moments in our lives where we intentionally make unwise decisions? Like against counsel, against experience, against whatever, your Jiminy Cricket voice, right? Like that internal, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. and yet we intentionally do it. And isn't it amazing because we are so quick to spot the intentional, unwise decision-making of others, right? Come on, we look there and we're like, really, another relationship? This one's the one, right? That's what you said about the last one. Really, like we do that. Oh, you're another purchase. Don't you realize, like, you have a mountain of debt? And it's so easy for us to look out there and say, how could they do that? Today, I want us to look in here because we are they, right? We are they always in our life. We make decisions and we convince ourselves this time it's going to be different. This time I need it. This time it's going to make sense. And we go against reasoning. We go against the counsel of others. If you're a Christian, you may go against what God has said for your life, and yet we will intentionally make unwise decisions and convince ourselves it's going to be different. It's going to be okay. This time he really means it. This time she really means it. This time I'm going to buy it, but it's okay. How great would it be in your life when you're faced with decisions? And I'm not just talking about big life decisions. I'm talking about the daily rhythm of life, the normal routine of life. How much freedom and health, think now for your own self, would be injected into your relationships, injected into your life experience, injected into the course and the goals and dreams you have for your life if you knew how to be wise. How in those moments to push against intentionally unwise decisions, push against the rationale and the justification that we create for ourselves, how great would it be to know, no, I have something in place that says you're going to make a wise decision this time. I mean, I see the health of our relationships going up. I see us being able to refrain from life experiences that you really don't want. You convince yourself, I have to try this. Everyone else in life has. But when you really can consider it, you know you don't want to experience that. Or there are things you want to experience and you're holding back. You're saying, I don't think I can do that. How great in those moments would it be to have something in place that says, this is how I'm going to make a wise decision. What would your relationship with God look like in that moment? Like if we could stop pushing against him and start embracing him and maybe do a little bit pushing towards the cultural norm, right? The status quo, how we navigate debt, how we navigate relationships, how we navigate career goals, all these great things. How great would it be in these moments that surface regularly to know, how am I going to be wise? How am I going to be wise? I think it'd be great. I think it would do wonders for our lives, both as individuals and as a community of people who gather together. And so our teaching point for this morning when it comes to wisdom is this. Wisdom dies where wishes thrive. It rhymes, guys. So did that. I'm on a roll. Wisdom dies where wishes thrive. Wisdom dies where wishes thrive. I want you to remember this, because I think it's important. I think this is the tool we need to have access to in moments where we're making decision. You're going to decide later today what ice cream flavor to have, right? Just me, right? Like, we're going to make decisions all throughout our day. We're going to make big decisions. We're going to make mundane decisions. Yet every decision has a result. Every decision has a consequence. So how great would it be to remember, okay, wisdom dies where wishes thrive. And we're going to explore the meaning of this point by looking at James. I love James. I've been enjoying James. We've been in the book of James for a few weeks now. We've got a few more weeks to go. We're finishing up at the end of August. And the reason why we're spending so much time in one book in the Bible is because there's a lot for James to tell us. Because James, if you don't know, is the younger brother of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And yet he doesn't open up his letter by referring to Jesus as older brother Jesus. He calls him master. He says, I'm a servant of Jesus Christ. Hold on a second. What does your older brother have to do to convince you he's not just older brother Jesus, but Lord of your life? And so if someone can go from calling him brother to Lord, it's worth considering his words. And I love James. If you're ever on Jeopardy, right? Because I know that's what you're hoping for, right? If you're ever on Jeopardy or on some kind of quiz show and someone asks, what's the theme of James? It's two words, how to. The how to. That really is, James tells us how to follow Jesus. He really does. Now understand, he doesn't say this is how you're saved. We talked about that a couple weeks ago with faith and works. James is not butting heads on what the gospel says, that we are saved only by Jesus Christ. He's very much focused on, now that you know Jesus, here's how to live for him. Here's what it looks like in your normal rhythm. And so we've been exploring this together. If you've missed any weeks, we have them all on the website for you. So you can go back and just watch those or listen to them. But today, James wants to tell us how to be wise. And we need that because you may be filling out a marriage certificate sometime soon. I got another one coming up, and the couple is very nervous for me. They really do not know what date I'm going to put on there. But we're going to make it a surprise. We'll figure that out when we get to it. It's September something. That's all I'm writing. James chapter 3. We're going to read verses 15 to 18 together today. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there and follow along with me. James chapter 3, verses 15 to 18. And if you do not own a Bible, my friends, we have Bibles for you in these baskets. Just take one with you when you leave today. I want you to have a copy of God's Word for yourself. You can download on your phone the Bible. James chapter 3, verses 15 to 18. These are four verses together. And what we like to do here is we stand and we read corporately. So if you're able, would you stand with me? And if you would like, would you read with us these verses? They'll be on the screen for us. James chapter 3, verse 15 through 18. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. You may be seated. Thank you for reading that with me. It's a good text. There's a lot going on here. James is introducing his audience, which, by the way, they existed almost 2,000 years ago. We believe that James wrote this somewhere around 50 AD, which is only 15 to 20 years after his big brother Jesus resurrected. And so this is really cool stuff, very close to the resurrection. And he's writing to a Jewish audience who is under Roman rule. If you know just a little bit about history, you probably can surmise that at different times, different empires have been in control, right? Egypt, Babylon, Persia, Rome, Greek, right? All these different empires. Right now, Rome is in control. Rome is in control, and they've been in control for a while. Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome, and they introduced Roman roads, which is great for society. They did a lot of great things. And yet, the Jewish people are done with Rome. No matter how nice their roads are, no matter how nice their peace is, they're done with Rome. And they are gearing up for a revolution at the time of James' writing. And so when they're getting ready for a big decision like revolt, they need wisdom. Right? There are those life decisions that you are going to make. Maybe it's not to revolutionize. You might. I don't know what's going on at your job, right? You might be doing something there, overthrow it. But there are moments where you are going to get ready for some big life decisions, a relationship, a purchase, a relationship with God. I mean, that's a big life decision. Do I believe this? So in that moment, there are going to be two wisdoms that you're going to be faced with. And we're going to call them culture's wisdom and the creator's wisdom. Culture's wisdom and the creator's wisdom. That is what is available to you. It is what was available to the Jews in 50. And they are getting ready to revolt. And so when you start to look at these two wisdoms, I mean, you need to know, what are we going to do to fuel this thing? We're either going to go for it, and we're going to overthrow Rome, or we're going to hold back. We really need some wisdom here. And James says, well, there's cultures and there's creators. And so we're going to explore together. What does culture's wisdom look like? What's the source of it? What's the outcome of it? What's the creator's wisdom look like? What's the source of it? What's the outcome of it? And can I know both wisdoms? Can I actually choose between the two? And I think the answer to that is yes, absolutely. Every one of us have opportunity. I have some pet peeves. You have some pet peeves? We all have pet peeves, right? You married a person with pet peeves. They weren't pet peeves when you got married, right? They were cute. That's what you called them. Oh, I love the way you chew your food. It's so cute. Right? 5 years later, you have to chew like that. that's pretty much marriage. If you haven't 5 years yet, it's coming. Right? Like that's where we land with pet peeves. There are things you just can't stand about other people. I get it. Snoring, whatever it might be. I have a pet peeve. One of my biggest pet peeves is whining. Whining. Now, I know. I have a three-year-old. My daughter just turned one yesterday. I know that I'm supposed to love my kids all the time as a parent. That's what I'm supposed to do. I got to be honest. I don't. I don't. There's one time when I do not love them, and it's when they're whining. I don't know what it is about whining with me, but it genuinely, you know when someone says like it goes down your back? Like I know what that means. I know when it starts here, it makes its whole way down my spine. I feel every whine in my spine, right? That's just where I land with that. And I look at them and I'm like, really? Like, you have so much. Yesterday, my daughter had a birthday party, and I mean, it was Toys R Us. It really was. She was just overwhelmed with toys and stuff, and we brought it all home. So much so that I need my father-in-law and brother-in-law to come over to help me unload the car. Like, it was going to take me days to unload the car by myself. And so we get everything into the living room, and it's my daughter's birthday, but my son thinks he just cashed in, right? He just thinks, like, this is it. For some reason, they only bought pink toys, but it's okay. These are my toys. And I got to tell you, man, it was a wine fest in my house last night. I was whining. I got to be honest. I was like, babe, why do we have these kids? Why did we do this? Do you remember? Do you remember a few years ago? But what gets worse than children whining, truthfully, is when adults whine, right? It's true. You know as much as I do that what's more irritating and more of a pet peeve and more frustrating isn't so much when kids whine, but when adults whine. And I do it, guys, I do it. But I don't call it that. We don't call it whining, we're adults. We know bigger words. We call it observing and processing. And I'm just evaluating the situation. And I'm just working through this. I need a moment. Me and God need something here. Like, we call it these things. And maybe if you're really bold, maybe if you'll really be honest, you might use this word, complaining. Right? You might call it that, but even that we push against. We don't like to say we're complaining. We're just looking at the way things are, just wondering why they are the way they are, and use phrases like, how come, and I deserve, and it's not fair. It's adult whining. It's adult whining. And James talks about adult whining in verse 15 there. He didn't word it that way, but he does. What did he say? For jealousy and selfishness are not God's wisdom. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's wisdom. And then he defines them in it. In what I think is just strong language. He says they're earthly, they're unspiritual. Hey, they're demonic. Jealousy and selfishness are so devastating that we're going to put them on par with just demonic. That's where James is going here. What James is talking about is adult whining, or for our teaching point today, wishing. Wishing things were different. Wishing you had the things of the people around you. What is jealousy and what is selfishness? Jealousy is I want what they have. It's not fair. I work just as long as they do. How come my paycheck looks like this? How come I have to drive this? How come we have to live here? Babe, why do we have two kids? That was last night, right? Why? How come? Why are things like this? Why can't they be? That's not fair, but I deserve two. You can just end the sentences because we all know it. That's why I said we're all jacked up here. We all land here. We all know what it's like to be jealous. We just won't call it that. We all know what it's like to whine. We just won't call it that. But James isn't afraid to call it what it is. And he isn't afraid to define it as demonic. And to say, no, it is so bad when you get jealous. It is so horrible when you start to look at what they have and focus on what you don't have. And that leads right into selfishness. But I deserve. But I need. But I want it too. And he's giving us the starting point for culture's wisdom. Hey, guys, you're getting ready to revolt against Rome. What's your motivation? Well, we want to be free like the other nations. Oh, that's jealousy. Yeah, but we deserve to have our own government. Oh, that's selfishness. Now listen, let me preface. I'm not saying it's wrong to want things. We're going to talk about that at the end. So don't write me off yet. Don't tune out yet. Okay, but James is creating a starting point for us and saying, hey, culture's wisdom tends to start in these two places. You want what they have because it'll make you better. It's all about you. You are the center of your story. It's all about Keith. It's the Keith Show, starring Keith, coffee, and ice cream, right? It's the Keith Show. And that's what we tend to do when we make decisions. We put us at the center. We say, well, that's not fair. I want it. And James tells us this type of wisdom is not healthy. This type of wisdom isn't going to help your relationship. It's not going to help your relationship with God, with others. It's not going to help you be the person, the best person you can be in God's eyes. What God has for you, his plan for your life, you're not going to find it starting with jealousy and selfishness. It's not going to get you there. But that is what culture pushes on us. That is what culture pushed way back when. It's still here. We just changed the language. We say things like the end justifies the means. Well, that just means whatever I have to do to get there, I'm going to do it. Well, you're putting you at the center. And James says that's kind of demonic. And he tells us the outcome of that in verse 16. It's going to lead to disorder. It's going to lead to chaos is what he's summing up there. And you know that's true. Take inventory. When's the last time you made a completely selfish decision? Was the outcome good? No, it was chaotic. You hurt the people around you. You thought it was going to be good. You convinced yourself this will be fine. But you couldn't predict the future because you can't, because I can't. We hope, we play out scenarios, and we think, well, if I decide to do this for me, I mean, truthfully, I need to be in a good place so I can help other people. So this is actually helping other people by me helping me. Aren't we good at playing that game? Convince ourselves of what we need to do for us because ultimately it'll help others. But we start with jealousy, we start with selfishness. James says, here's the result. Here's the result. Chaos. You cannot, and we're all sitting in a very relaxed state right now. The air is blowing, coffee is brewing. This guy's handsome, right? Like we are just all of us here. So it's real easy for you to process your decisions right now and think logically and say, I know what I need to do because you're in a relaxed state. Because you can understand, okay, I'm not going to do this out of jealousy and selfishness, but let's get into the decision-making world, the environment. I always say this is a great safe space, but this isn't as real as the real world. We come here to discover Jesus, to bring him into the real world where there are real world scenarios that take place. If you're broken, you come into this space. If you feel whole, you come into this space. I love this space. And yet we need to take what we discover together here into those spaces where it's way harder to process wise decision-making. And yet we tend to lean on jealousy and selfishness. And James is saying, if you're going to do that, the outcome's going to be chaos. You're going to think you're doing the right thing. You're going to think it's real because everyone around you will operate under those pretenses. You ever got advice from other people that say, just quit, just leave her, don't worry about it. You need to put you at the center. You need to be happy. If you're not, change it, buy it, do it, right? You hear that. And so we just buy into it and think, well, this has to be normal. It's not normal. It's just what everyone's doing. It doesn't mean that it's normal. It doesn't mean it's right. And so James says, you're going to start there on jealousy and selfishness. The outcome's going to be chaos. And you're going to think that it's the real thing, but it's not. A couple weeks ago, I ate a steakhouse. And I got to tell you, for 28 years of my life, because I started eating steak at zero, right? For 28 years of my life, when I've been eating steak, I thought I was eating steak until a couple weeks ago. I had the real thing, my friends. And I threw down. I ordered a portion that I should not have finished in one sitting, but I couldn't help myself. It was awesome. It was great steak. And I got to tell you, when I ate something that tasted real, I now know what isn't. Because I had a taste of something that was real. And I know, I'm like, this is, I will spend money on this. This is good. Amen. This was the eighth day creation. God looked at it on the eighth day and said, steakhouse, it is good. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. But I know what real is like. And when you get an understanding of real wisdom, of the Creator's wisdom, it starts to really butt heads with culture's wisdom. It starts to really make you think, why and how have I been making decisions this way? And look at how James describes the Creator's wisdom in verse 17. I love the description. Verse 17, wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is peace-loving, gentle at all times, willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. Now, while I love everything that James writes there, I got to tell you there's a problem with what he writes there. Because culture's wisdom would tell us that wisdom is found in intellect, in life experience. And you get wiser the more you know, the more you've been through. And yet James doesn't use any of that language to describe the Creator's wisdom. And I think we know that's true because I start off by saying smart people make unwise decisions all the time. Right? Come on, you look at people, I look at myself and I say, how could you do that? Yes, you're not brilliant and a genius, but you should know better than that. And what that tells us is that more knowledge, more life experience is not the path to wiser decision making. We'd want to believe that, well, if I could just go through it, then I'll understand it. If I could just take a class on it, then I'll know what to do. But James doesn't use any of that language to describe the Creator's wisdom. Unfortunately for us, he uses these behaviors that are really characters and qualities of wisdom. Oh, culture's wisdom is that way. Creator's wisdom is this way. Oh, culture's wisdom would have you make a decision for yourself. The Creator's wisdom is peace-loving. The Creator's wisdom is gentle. The Creator's wisdom is serving and fruit of good deeds and loving. Hold on a second, I see a difference here. It seems like culture's wisdom is putting me at the center of the story and the Creator's wisdom is putting others at the center of the story. It seems like culture's wisdom is saying, do what you need to for you, and the Creator's wisdom is saying, you're going to make decisions that are going to benefit the people around you. That's different. That's a totally different source. It's a totally different reason and motivation. Here's the problem, though. We can't make those decisions, right? We cannot naturally make decisions that are just going to help other people. We can't. It's not in us to do that. From the moment we're born, we are looking at making decisions that are going to first benefit us. And as a byproduct, if it helps you, well, that's good too. But yet James is pitting these two wisdoms against each other, and he's showing a completely different source and a different outcome. And here's the hope. We see it in the outcome that he describes in verse 18. What does he say there? It almost seems like he forgets what he's talking about. Because he says right after that, and those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. Hang with me, James. We know older brother Jesus would jump around the way he talked, right? You ever read the stories of Jesus and you're like, where are you? Where? I'm not following what you're talking about here. It's so great. People ask Jesus a question and he'll answer with a story that seems to make no sense whatsoever. And it seems like James picked up a little bit of that from his older brother. Well, you were talking about wisdom. You were talking about, why are you jumping to peacemakers and harvests and seeds? Oh, because this is the outcome of the Creator's peace. You're going to make decisions that are based from a character of love and service and gentleness and kindness and fruit of good deeds. Here's what it's going to look like. You're going to be a peacemaker, and you're going to sow peace, and you're actually going to reap righteousness. That word righteousness has to cause us to stop and reflect on what he's saying. Because the word righteousness really means right standing. It means that when God looks at you, he sees you in right standing with him. There are moments where my kids, more my son, my daughter, not so much yet, but my son, when he's in right standing with me, when I see what he's doing and how he's acting, I say, this is great. We're moving in a great direction together. And there are moments when he's not listening and I know you're not in right standing with dad. And we have what we call in our house punishment. When you make a bad choice, there's a punishment. There's a consequence. Problem with you and I, we keep pushing into culture's wisdom. We keep making decisions that don't put us in right standing with God. We can't slap righteousness across us at any time. This word calls us to look at the gospel. Because the gospel of Jesus Christ, the good news of Jesus, declares that every single person is in wrong standing with the Creator. No matter how good we may think we are, no matter what our decision-making looks like, no matter the wisest of things we've done, it doesn't make a difference. We, all of us, lean into those two words, jealousy and selfishness, and that puts us in wrong standing with the Creator. There's a verse of Scripture that says, there is none righteous, no, not one. And yet God looks at the no, not ones and says, I'm going to sow wisdom into this world. I'm going to sow peace into this world, and he will be called Jesus Christ. And so wisdom itself, peace itself, the Prince of Peace is sown into our world. And don't miss this. The beauty is we reap righteousness from his peace. Paul says that he who knew no sin became sin so that we might become the righteousness of God. That's the gospel message, that you and I, the no not ones, no not one righteous anywhere, we look to Jesus Christ, peace, wisdom, and we reap what he alone deserved, righteousness. His body was literally sown into the ground for 3 days. And yet, what do we sing this morning? The resurrected King is resurrecting me. He conquers death and the grave, giving us hope, giving us now the choice between culture's wisdom and the Creator's wisdom. Because I believe what James is saying here and the way he's moving through this text is that, yeah, the Creator's wisdom seems great, but without Jesus, you cannot choose it. You can't. And you know that. You're not going to lean into wisdom that's going to help other people. You won't do that. I won't do that if not for understanding Jesus Christ in the gospel, if not for really processing what he did for me, no strings attached. I'm never going to move towards making decisions that are gentle, the fruit of good deeds, peace-loving. And yet the outcome of living that way reaps righteousness. The people around you start to see how you're living, and now they have opportunity to be in right standing with God as well. How beautiful is that? So what does this look like practically? When you are faced with decisions, whether on the daily rhythm or life-changing decisions, you need to start processing, am I choosing out of jealousy and selfishness, or am I choosing out of peacemaking? Am I going to make this decision? And look, you're going to benefit from the decision. I said, I'm not calling us to a place where we never benefit from a decision. But I found that the best way I benefit is when the people around me better understand Jesus through my decision-making. And so at times that may call me to make a purchase. That may call me to refrain from a purchase. That may call me to engage in a relationship. That may call me to start new relationships. That may mean that I love this person so much that I need to say, hey, I want to spend more time with you. But me spending time with you is not the best example of Jesus to you right now. And so this is how we're going to navigate this. It's hard. It's way different than just saying, oh, this isn't working for me anymore, so I'm out. Oh, I need that, so I'm going to buy it. It's way different way. But man, there is freedom in it. Look at the outcome. You know the outcome. Push aside just the text and look at the outcome of your own life. Does it look chaotic? Does it look like, I don't know how I got here? I mean, it was one thing I bought. Now I'm staring down this mountain of debt. It was just one relationship I thought would be okay. And now this is where we are. It's strained. There's tears. Where's the hope? James is outlining for us. And I know we don't want to hear this today. Come on. No one wanted to come to church today and hear this. Guess what? 2,000 years ago, no one wanted James to write this. They didn't. They're getting ready for a revolution. They don't want him writing things like, do what's going to benefit Rome. Peacemaking? Are you kidding me, James? We need to overthrow this. And unfortunately, to bring closure, they attempt it. And in AD 70, their entire temple system is wiped out. Everything is wiped out for the Jews. You notice? I saw it. No one here strapped a cow to their car today. You know why? Because the temple system was done away with when Jesus Christ resurrected, and it was officially destroyed in AD 70. Temple gone. Because they said, well, that's nice, James, but we're going to do this for us. We need to move in this fashion. And now the temple was not just a place of worship. This was the center of Jewish life. Wiped out. No more buying, no more selling, no more jobs, no more healthcare. None of that. It's gone. The temple is gone. Because they moved on culture's wisdom. I don't know what the outcome is going to look like for you. And I'm not trying to scare you or threaten you because that's silly. That's not a motivation that works. What does work is love. I do know that there's a God who loves you and a creator who has said, here's a better way. Here's the best way for you to navigate your life. How are we going to do this? I think we do it through two ways primarily. Prayer and community. Prayer and community is what I found this week is what I found in my decision making. I needed to pray and stop before I was doing things. And for me this week, it was about purchases. I wanted to buy something new. And I knew I needed to pray this through and I needed to ask God, is this the best decision? And I'll be honest with you, I landed. It wasn't made out of jealousy and it wasn't going to be made out of selfishness. But I still, through prayer and through communicating to God, said, you know what? This isn't the best time to do this right now. This isn't the wisest time. This isn't going to help me move towards peacemaking. And I need a community. Oh my goodness, if I didn't have the people that I reached out to in my decision making this week, I would have made a different decision. You have both of those things in this space because we prioritize those things here. Community is crucial as one of our core values here. There are people sitting all around you who are ready to make decisions. What would it look like today if before you leave, you decide you're going to give your number to one person? How cool would that be if you got one other person's number today and said, hey, can I just have you like on speed dial? Remember speed dial? Right? Can I just have you on this that when I'm going to make a decision, I could reach out to you and maybe we could pray together through this? That's a church. That's what we want this space to be. It's not about you're an outsider, you can't know my number. No, we want to connect with each other here. Community is crucial. Amen. And so there's opportunity for you to embrace the Creator's wisdom today. It begins with acknowledging you need Jesus. It's not going to make sense beyond that. It won't. You need to know who Jesus is. You need to know the Creator himself who sent Jesus himself into this world for you so that you could have choice, so that you could know culture, Creator. I want the outcome to be peacemaking. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for loving us in this way. Thank you for your text. Thank you for your grace. Thank you that we get to respond through choice. All of us are going to have decisions to make this week, today. Some of them are daily rhythms. Some of them are life decisions. May we evaluate this week the source of our decision making. May we take inventory on the outcome we have seen most often. And may you move us by your Spirit to make decisions that are beginning with peace and are ending with righteousness. In Jesus' name, amen.